County Board of Commissioners planning session on April 26th at 1 p.m. in the conference room. Gary Schmidt, you're up.
Thank you, Chair Smith. So the protocol, as you've done before, this is your second planning meeting, commissioners. This is being recorded. It is audio only. There are no video, no cameras. It is airing live on Zoom, and it will be recorded. Commissioner Savas is out of the office today. All the other commissioners are present. Today's session is being facilitated by Cindy Becker, who is a project manager in county administration. She was the director of Health, Housing, and Human Services here at Clackamas County many years ago, and has an extensive background working for state, nonprofit, large agencies with not only H3S issues, but budget management. She's an excellent contributor. So she's agreed to facilitate the meeting to talk about two items on your agenda, Blue Ribbon Committee and Housing and Shelter Solutions. So with that, I'll turn it over, if okay, Chair, turn over to Cindy to help facilitate our meeting.
Great, thank you. So I just wanted to point out a couple of things. The purpose of today's meeting is to achieve focus, clarity, and make decisions. Okay, so remember these as we go through the entire meeting.
Heard the cats,
as long as you're not feral, because if you are feral, someone could be wearing this.
I love that.
Oh, it doesn't play well with others.
I hope not to have to keep this out, but if I have to at the end of the meeting, I will do that. Okay. So, thank you. So we're going to start off today's meeting with a conversation discussion by H3S, led off by Mary Rombach. I think all of you know Mary. She's pretty incredible. I mean, she just is quite a leader in the state. I say that even when she's not in the room, in terms of mental health addictions, she is sought after as a formal and informal advisor by the state. She's the president of the Association of Oregon County's Mental Health.
You're staying in Clackamas County, right?
I am. Yes, I can guarantee you. I will never go to the state. With all due respect to my state partners.
Sorry, Cindy.
Sigh of relief.
So, as Gary mentioned, when I was a director years ago, because I'm old now, we really started the transformation of behavioral health. The way it had been. And Mary and her staff have taken it to the next level. And so I think one of the things that's important as you have these conversations is that you understand what's in place today before we start reinventing the wheel, because you have an incredibly strong behavioral health goals and challenges and resources. And behavioral health folks also understand what the gaps are. It's not like everything is all roses, but they get it. So I'm going to turn it over to Mary and to have this conversation with you.
Would you introduce the team first, please, Mary?
Oh, absolutely. So again, for the record, Mary Rombach, Behavioral Health Division Director under Health, Housing, and Human Services. I will let my partners.
Yes. Hi, everyone. Denise Swanson, Deputy Director for Health, Housing, and Human Services. Nice to be here.
And I'm Egan Danahy. I'm sitting here in place for Sarah Jacobson. I'm the Program Manager for Health Centers Behavioral Health.
Very good. Yep. So I appreciate just taking a few minutes. We did give you guys a lot of information, and we can certainly walk through some of the handouts because I think visually it's helpful to hear sort of the current state of services. I do want to give a little bit of context to the way funding works, because it has changed over the last 15 years as the state has evolved to the way that they manage their state Medicaid dollars, their state general fund, and the responsibility of those who are both on Oregon Health Plan and those who are uninsured. So, I think we're in 8 to 9 years ago, Oregon Health Authority changed the way that they manage state Medicaid, and they contracted with coordinated care organizations. So here in Clackamas County, we have two CCOs. Please let me just say that. Coordinated care organizations, HealthShare of Oregon and Trillium Community Health Plan. And so they're responsible for anybody in this county who's eligible for the Oregon Health Plan, and they're enrolled in one of those two CCOs. So the coordinated care organizations really are now the Medicaid health plan for primary care, dental, and behavioral health, as well as some specialty services such as like psychological testing, things like that. HealthShare actually has a total of 430,000 members in the Tri-County with 89,000 covered lives here in Clackamas. Trillium Community Health Plan is much, much smaller. They're at 24,000 in the Tri-County with just a little over 8,000 individuals living in Clackamas County. So the coordinated care organizations are actually really now in the current state responsible for the delivery of comprehensive services in our region for Medicaid, Medicaid or enrolled members or folks on the Oregon Health Plan. They do have formal relationships with health centers as a provider. They have a formal relationship with me as a safety net provider, and they do invest in our community. So I just want to make a point that there's a future conversation for partnership.
Mary, can you back up and tell, you said for health share, it was 430K. And you said for Clackamas County specifically?
89,000.
Mm-hmm.
And those were numbers as of actually yesterday.
Thank you.
And then, so again, coordinated care organizations, they have a direct contract with Oregon Health Plan or Oregon Health Authority, and then they ultimately have responsibility in the three counties. Oregon Health Authority is also responsible. They also have a role for our development of our residential programs across the state. So anytime Oregon Health Authority is contracting for things like mental health residential, they are the ones who license and certify and pay for those programs. So I'm also highlighting the complexity of the funding system as well.
Mary, are the residential programs that considered statewide resources?
They are considered, thank you for calling that out. They are considered statewide resources. We do have a handful of mental health residential programs primarily ran through Columbia Care in Villebois and a couple of other areas. We generally have mostly Clackamas County individuals who are able to access these, but if there was an opening and somebody from Deschutes County needed a placement, then they would be placed here in this county. So it is a statewide resource. It's not dedicated just to Clackamas County. The Oregon Health Authority then also contracts with my division as a community mental health program. We are responsible for sort of two primary areas, crisis safety net and forensic. So that is our crisis line, our mobile crisis team, involuntary commitment, our aid and assist, that's sort of that population. And that's insurance blind. We are serving anybody who falls under that program or in need, regardless of whether they're uninsured, on commercial insurance, or Medicaid. And then they also contract with me for contract out behavioral health services, mental health, and substance use outpatient for those who are uninsured. So that's sort of, we become sort of, quote, the safety net in our contract with the Oregon Health Authority, both for crisis services and those who are not covered, which over the years, because of Medicaid expansion, has become, actually, we just serve a few hundred people a year through outpatient services because most folks are now covered by Medicaid, or they were able to purchase insurance on the open market, or they're covered by their own employer for insurance. So I set that as the framework because I think it speaks to, over the years, how Medicaid in particular has changed from a very much state-focused program. It used to actually be counties. We used to, many moons ago, be a mental health organization, now to CCOs, to coordinated care organizations. And so the future conversation will be about some of those partnerships. I really just wanted to sort of set that as a frame because it is somewhat complex at times because there are a couple of different funders and there are opportunities when we begin talking about gaps in our delivery system around who sort of the lead player on development of those filling some of those gaps. We certainly have a place at the table to inform CCOs and the state. And then sometimes it would be our role to fill that gap because either we've identified funding or funding has come to us directly to actually expand a particular service, for example. So I'll just pause for a moment there.
That is a lot, but it helps us moving forward on this, I think. That's me.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead, Mary.
Okay.
No question.
No. I'm beginning to know your look. So I wasn't actually sure.
Not just to throw you off. No, I'm gonna have to
if you don't mind, commissioners, I would like Mary to get through her presentation I know we're all gonna have questions.
Yes.
Okay.
But it's just so important. Is that right, Cindy?
Yeah, the main takeaway here is that it used to be a very county centric system.
Yes.
And the state has, and that really started with Governor Kitzhaber, really, has really changed that to where the CCOs are the major contracting player. And the state, so the funds go directly from the state to the CCOs as opposed to the state to the county. And then what the state provides the county is has much more focus.
Yeah. So there are two handouts in your packet that I think are probably the ones that are a little bit easier. We have a other handouts that are pretty narrative, and this is, you know, this is comprehensive, but again, probably is not listing out everything. Those backup documents would be really helpful. So we wanted just to really give a lay of the land of the current substance use services that H3S is either supporting, providing, contracting out. You know, we also are very well aware of other things that are happening in the delivery system, but we really wanted to just be focused on right now, sort of our role as Health, Housing, and Human Services. And so when we begin looking at substance use services, we're looking at the top bar is sort of really what's currently happening. We have some services in development, and then we have some known gaps. And so that's, we want to just be aware and call that out as well. So, you know, substance use prevention, and Commissioner West joined my Mental Health and Addiction Council last night and heard a lot about the value and importance of prevention. So we have some prevention activities. They're either they're sort of delivered or are coordinated either through children, family, and community connections or through public health. So things like the Clackamas Prevention Coalition, doing trainings and presentations, that's both CFCC and public health, some technical assistance, as well as youth programming. That's a big prevention model for CFCC, children, families, and community connections. Then we move to overdose prevention. We, again, it's very much a prevention model. So we have public health doing a lot of the data analysis that comes through around overdose information, community messaging, naloxone distribution. That's both public health and health centers. We also have system coordination. That really is a couple of us really doing some cross-system collaboration. So, for example, I pull together all of our current substance use outpatient providers and peers once a month to do a collaborative. So we're sort of sharing information out and they're sharing information amongst one another. So if they're opening a new program or they have a wait list for a current program, there's a forum for them to actually be together in a room to really talk about how are we lifting up substance use. And that was a gap for many years. We were very focused on mental health, but not focused on substance use. So I actually convened that group about a year and a half ago, and it's been really quite successful. And then we have the role of care coordination. So again, this all is leading up to often the engagement before we get folks to actually treatment. So we have the Project HOPE, which is a community paramedic model where they're actually following up. So this is with Clackamas Fire. We also have a recovery peer who's attached to that through public health funding. And they're doing follow-up with individuals who have had an overdose and a naloxone save. Yeah. So that's a really important program, but also pretty small. My shop does intensive care coordination specific to substance use. So these are individuals who are engaging in the emergency room because of the substance use concern, and they're on Medicaid, they're on Oregon Health Plan. And so we're contracted with HealthShare to actually provide the intensive care coordination start to finish, connecting them with treatment services, housing, any social determinants that they need to help them be successful. And then, of course, housing case management is really critical for folks who are in recovery. And then we have our outpatient treatment, and that is going to be both I think it's important to note that health centers, their behavioral health clinics, are our largest outpatient provider of substance use and mental health services here in the county. We have other community-based providers, but they are by far the largest provider. And so Egan will be able to speak a little bit more specifically to some of the types of outpatient treatment services, because it is an array of services, some happening actually in coordination with the jail, as well as just the traditional, you come for your 50-minute appointment, you might be doing a substance use group, you know, things like that. I'm going to stop there.
What's TX mean on the sheet?
It was treatment. Oh, it,
that's what
we just messed our lines up if we try to spell everything out. Treatment. Why are we taxing community corrections?
That's okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
So then, for services and development, and that will be after I speak. We'll give Egan an opportunity to talk about the relocation of the behavioral health clinic and some of the expansion opportunities for substance use. And then really we need to spend some time, but not to spend too much time on current gaps, you know, prevention education. We can't do enough prevention education. So that's going to continue to be an area. Current gaps under really across the board is workforce, the need for immediate treatment, not maybe for all substance use services, but things like detox without management. If somebody at that moment, they're ready. To have, they're ready to go into treatment that need to have it available now, not tomorrow, because tomorrow looks different. We do not actually have enough, nor do we have any here in our local community around youth and adult substance use residential treatment. They're in our citizens, our residents, especially on Oregon Health Plan, have access to that, but they have to leave our community to do that.
And Denise is working on something.
Yes.
That gap area that we talked about.
Yeah.
I just had to put the plug in. Sorry, commissioners, go ahead.
Just one thing. Why is there a gap in workforce? Are we not coordinating the workforce more?
The workforce is really the resignations that we've seen across the healthcare system. So when we talk about workforce, we're talking about
talking about getting people and recovering them.
No, we're really talking about So we have programs. Yeah,
people who are entering the field.
Yes, we're aware across over the last 3 years of community-based providers who have had to reduce access. Close programs because they are not able to staff their programs.
And they've said they have never, ever had as many vacancies in their workforce as they have today.
Really same in nursing.
Yeah.
Same in nursing. It's part of the same problem. It's really bad.
Yeah.
Really bad.
Yeah. Okay. So part of the issue isn't necessarily expanding more providers. It's being able to increase the workforce of existing providers so they can take on more patients.
Yeah.
Then I have to make sure our workforce board is aware of this, actually, because if that's what they need is training, what are we doing with our community college? And
I thought it's a training issue.
It's not a training issue
as well.
Really?
Yes, it is.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
It came up at the Tri-County Planning Body.
Did it really? It's a hard work for...
And so, you know, again, none of this will be new. We need, you know, ongoing stabilization services, transition services, which we have some, but it's not comprehensive enough. And then things like a community recovery center, these are not necessarily my words, but it's the words that our community uses, as well as things like withdrawal management. You all call that detox. We call it and it's really a medical withdrawal management approach. We might also say sobering is needed in this community.
Community recovery center, how do you define that?
I think this is getting defined from the community around the role of enhanced peers. Though we have a lot of peers embedded through many of our systems, it's really that one-stop shop for connection to treatment, to housing, to, you know,
navigation.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Exactly.
And we do have a definitions page in your packet as well.
All these things he's talking about. I hope I actually said the right definition.
Except for the one Cindy just asked about.
Yeah, exactly.
Not on the
we'll
page.
Add that. Yeah. So that's substance use. That's a big one.
Big one, yes.
So
big one, it's going to be liable. Okay.
So mental health services, again, you'll see that this is a little more comprehensive because, frankly, over the many generations, mental health services have been sort of really been the focus area. Substance use has lagged behind. We're now getting there, but it really, and we treat the system as separate, even though we're trying to move it closer together. And yet individuals they don't silo. They sometimes have concerns for both alcohol or drug use and mental health. So one of these days we'll actually have one coordinated system. That's the goal. So we look, this looks a little different than the other one. We really talked a lot about sort of, because we have actually quite a few services and supports that are in place. We have assessment and referral. There's that, again, a little bit around that prevention stuff. So many of us do, you know, my division promote our main phone number as a referral line. So if, regardless of your insurance, if you're needing access to mental health services, give us a call. We know how to navigate the system. Again, I'm sort of listing out some of our partners. CFCC does some mental health navigation. Several of us, including health centers, my division, CFCC, we actually are supporting individuals post-incarceration, whether we're currently in the jail or they get identified to us. We have a whole array of outpatient services, either through our through health centers, behavioral health clinics, or through our contracted providers or providers who are here in this community, LifeWorks Northwest, Cascadia, LifeStance, those are some known names. Mm-hmm, yes. Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. And we'll all have actually probably, Egan, talk a little bit more about the array of outpatient services. I do want to call out that, again, as with my state contract, I'm responsible for ensuring contracts for mental health and substance use for individuals who are uninsured, so that we have a safety net for those. For those folks, we do not pay nor license residential, but we have an oversight role as a community mental health program. So I have a residential coordinator, and we have what's called exceptional needs coordinators, where we have oversight for anybody who is in a licensed residential treatment home, a licensed residential treatment facility. These are two different types of levels of care with different staffing, as well as licensed adult foster homes, which we are actually increasing the number of adult foster homes here in this community. It's a family run home with up to five individuals. It's actually a wonderful model, as well as respite services. So those actually all fall under my shop as a responsibility. And then we have really the critical crisis services that again, are for anybody in this community, including us, who might be experiencing any kind of mental health distress. So we obviously have the 24/7 crisis and support line, 24/7 mobile crisis response, our urgent mental health walk-in center, which Commissioner West was with us yesterday and got the tour, as well as intensive care coordination. Again, that's the same population I was talking about for substance use. These are individuals on the Oregon Health Plan who are accessing the emergency room because of mental health concerns. They are then referred to us, and we were from start to finish trying to get them connected so that they're not utilizing the emergency
department. Is the warm line still in existence?
The warm line is, we don't have a formal relationship anymore. We're not funding that warm line, but that is actually an important reminder of a resource. Yeah. So we have
to be warm lines for people who are not in crisis, but they need someone to talk to.
Oh, okay.
And so there's an 800 number that anyone in the state can call, and we used to house it.
We used to house it at our crisis clinic, yeah.
But it's still available.
Yeah, folks. Yeah. So our services and development, Egan will talk a little bit about the relocation of the clinic and some expansion. You all are aware of the aid and assist housing. I've been calling it behavioral health housing investment, but for in particular the aid and assist population, so that we are trying to successfully move people out of the state hospital or avoid them going to the state hospital. And then we presented last week on the 23-hour crisis stabilization center. And gaps, workforce. Some lack of specialized services, I think, especially for youth and families. We do identify psychiatric inpatient as there's just not enough capacity, but that would be an example that probably we wouldn't have authority to develop that, but we certainly can be at the table with the state and hospital systems to say, what's the opportunity for increased capacity? And then again, I should just say we should just smack workforce all over this, because that continues to be the challenge.
Okay. Can we just touch on the workforce just 1 second? Do we know why for sure? Is it pay, burnout, people don't want to do the work?
If I could jump in, it's all of that. And it is certainly a statewide, really a nationwide dilemma. I might get this number wrong, but I believe the legislature allocated $20 million just a few weeks ago to pay for anyone who is qualified to take the licensure exams. So to become an LCSW, a licensed social worker, a licensed professional counselor, which is what I am. Those tests are $500-$600. The state said, we'll pay for all of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh. The need is so great. It's true for certified alcohol and drug counselors as
well. So to be able to take that test and pass it, what does your background need to be?
So to even be eligible to take a licensure exam, you have to have a master's degree in psychology for an LPC. Again, how I came to the field. And an LCSW has to have a master's of social work. And then you need to qualify with a certain number of hours. When I was doing it, it was about 3,000 hours before you could be licensed. The state not only changed or contributed finances, they lowered the number of hours that are necessary.
What about the education hours? Why do you need a master's degree to counsel somebody? I am not minimizing what you do, but that's one of the cruxes of this issue. And I had thought I had heard that COCAD was working on doing something more with that. Maybe it's just what you say.
Yeah, it's complicated, as it always is.
You need to,
sorry.
Sure.
That's okay. But I think just in education, one of the issues, and it goes also back to nursing and primary care, is turning these folks out of the higher education system and really getting it starting there, kind of upstream. But go ahead.
Yeah. Real quick, the main thing that we don't have any control over is Medicaid and Medicare will not reimburse for people who aren't licensed.
Got it. Yeah. Interesting.
With some exception.
Yeah. I'm surprised there hasn't been an effort to expand who can sit for the boards. What are their master's degrees? Like, why couldn't a master's level nurse sit with that? With maybe a little bit of additional education, but that is not a hard switch.
Right.
Right. Or there's other, and there's, and so there's that piece of it. And I think at least this is probably crosses over to what you just said, is that COVID decimated your workforce.
Yep.
Nurses were like, so when I went to nursing school, my class to go in a baby brand new nurse, and I finally got to, I qualified to apply at PCC. There were 1,000 applicants. They took 80 of us, 60 of us survived to the end of the program.
Yep.
Right. Oregon has one of the highest standards for licensure. Mm-hmm. So we don't play well with any other state, though we have the high, we're the highest credentialed nurses, as California and Washington kind of are that way, where there's giant packs where if you're in the South or in the Midwest, if you belong to these 25 or 30 other states and you're licensed in one state, you can flip over and be licensed in another, and they recognize it clearly. So there's a lot of like inherent barriers just within Oregon system too, on top of the burnout.
Yep.
So let's get into it quickly. The behavioral health clinic.
Sure.
Yeah,
that'd be great. Sure. So like Mary said, we are one of and the largest outpatient contracted agency. So sticking just to the behavioral health part, obviously as part of the FQHC, we work in an integrated way with our primary care and dental services. However, for behavioral health, it's kind of a situation. Sorry, I forgot my water.
Sure.
Thank you. It's a situation of kind of be careful what you wish for, because I'm a therapist. I worked here at the county doing direct care for 7 or 8 years, right when Cindy was leaving years ago. And thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
So be careful what you wish for, because now the demand for behavioral health services is unlike anything we've seen before. And Commissioner West, you're exactly right. This didn't happen gradually. This happened suddenly.
Yeah.
And COVID has allowed people to get services from their home, which was a big change, right, for telehealth and remote care. And the demand for in-person services has just increased and increased and increased. We talked about the workforce area. Let me tell you about our services. We do outpatient services for behavioral health, which means mental health and addiction. Okay. We have/had two locations here on the campus. the Stewart Center and the Hilltop Clinic, which are going the way of the dodo.
They're
weird. Yes, right. So we also serve four different high schools at our school-based health centers. The demand for services there has been through the roof as well. And then we have some integrated clinicians who work at our primary care offices so that we can incorporate, like the beautiful new Sandy building, where we incorporate all the services together. So I can be a little long-winded, so I'll pause right there for any questions.
Talk about behavioral health. You're talking about anything from addiction to schizophrenia to, eating disorders to,
That's the behavioral health is all encompassing. That's the term that we're trying to use to really talk about all of that. So mental health, specialty concerns, as well as substance use. And then, there are differences between sort of the compilation of services for mental health folks, trying to seek services versus substance use. So yes, correct.
How does this work as an outpatient thing? Is that really effective? Outpatient, you go in, but you go out, but where's this, if you're not stable?
Well,
we
are
stabilized.
You're absolutely right that clients have to have a certain level of stability to be able to make it to our clinics. Mm-hmm. It's not hard to find clients. In fact, Cindy was making reference to how it used to be paid for by the state and then the CCOs came in. One of the major things that you all need to be aware of is that the CCOs, in this case, HealthShare, changed the way they viewed the region. And they, a few years ago, said, you can be a resident of Multnomah or Clackamas or Washington County and go to any clinic in those three areas. So when we, as a large outpatient clinic, say, hey, we're open for business, we get bombarded by people from all around the metro area, which was not the case when I started. When I started, it was, Clackamas served Clackamas. So that's a big part of it too.
And if I could say, it's a pyramid, right? So we have a lot of folks who are what I call the walking worried. So they are still, getting their kid off to school. They're still maybe working, but they're struggling. They're struggling with depression, anxiety. Yeah. That's a large portion of the folks in the behavioral health system. And then the top of the pyramid are the folks with, severe mental illness, which is why we have to have a continuum of the model, right? Because it's not a one size fits all. So a lot of people do very well with outpatient. It's actually the thing that allows them to keep moving forward.
It depends on where they are on that.
Absolutely.
On that continuum also, there's a direct correlation with their health instability.
Absolutely.
People who are homeless and people who have no resources are not, regardless of their level of sparing, they're not going to be able to make their way to the clinic, or the services are going to be less effective, quite honestly, have no place to go. So there is that intersection, but as Mary said, it's not for everybody that is served, but there is a group of people who, again, if you don't have stable housing, the rest doesn't matter. And so it's really, titrating, if you will, what your level of severity is for mental health and or addiction services. And to what extent you're stable in your house, you could be cancer, you could be whatever, but they do have a relationship. But the clinic, again, the behavioral health clinic that is county owned, if you will, is the most stable in terms of resources, because quite honestly, the staff are higher paid and have benefits. And so they're going to have less of an issue with finding qualified staff than 5% is. But that comes at a cost too, because we can't continue to have all of these county owned clinics because we can't afford it. So, it's that balance. Because of time, there is a third slide here around housing. And I don't know how much time you want to spend on that today. You just want to focus on
Are you asking, Commissioner?
Yes.
Say, Commissioners, do we want to focus on housing too, or do we just want to take on mental health and addiction services?
And we do not have Vahid here, so if we talk about housing, it's going to be mainly a high level, which I know you have had a lot of presentations on these materials as well. So,
very.
So, Commissioners, the reason you're getting this briefing is it tees up the conversations while you're here about the Blue Ribbon Committee and the housing summits. Part of it is we want you to know there's a lot that's already happening that we know you know, but you have so much you on your mind you may not remember. So we're just teeing you up to prepare you for that. So I would offer, give an update on housing that's enough to guide what they want to do with the Blue Ribbon Committee and housing summits. So can you do that,
please? Yes, absolutely. So if we go through the same visual slide on housing, I'll do as Mary did, just kind of run through. Under prevention and assessment, you know, we have energy assistance and weatherization, which is keeping people in their houses to prevent them from becoming homeless. We serve a lot of seniors in that program as well. Neighborhood livability project, the regional long-term rent assistance. So we have quite a bit of rent assistance programs through social services. Eviction prevention, that's also through our resolution services program, and then coordinated housing access, which is our hotline that people can call into and get services, whether it's they're becoming homeless, they are homeless, etc., and get connected to services.
Now, one of the things I think is important to note is that eviction prevention really gets underplayed, but that is huge. If you can keep somebody from being homeless, and what happens is we deal with them once they're homeless, but we don't really put enough resources into
that. I said that very same thing to the government.
It's a huge piece of the rent assistance, as well as really trying to keep people from losing the place that they are at. So that's a big piece. Under subsidized and affordable housing, you know, we have public housing, we have vouchers. We have privately owned affordable housing for Section 8 as well, and then a family self-sufficiency program that we offer. With transitional housing, we have the Veterans Village, Serenity and Haven houses, and then motel transitional housing that's also with vouchers as well. Emergency shelters, I think you're all quite familiar with, are seasonal shelters now, not only for warming shelters, but cooling shelters, as well as during emergency situations like wildfires. And then there's your hotel motel vouchers that can be used and facility-based shelters. For our unsheltered homeless, we have street outreach, rapid rehousing, and hygiene services. And a lot of this work we do with our nonprofit community as well. Services in development, the Navigation Center, affordable housing, obviously, the adjacent property for Vets Village, and then also looking at siting other emergency shelters as well. And then current gaps, and we know there are many, lack of affordable housing being the number one gap, and that falls under prevention, under subsidized, and having transitional housing for people, behavioral health housing, as we have discussed, and then under emergency shelters, having more shelters, we need more of that, more behavioral health and respite shelter and recuperative care shelter. And so, and then of course, a gap is the 23-hour crisis stabilization center, which hopefully we're filling.
We'll move into services and development. Yeah.
We'll move into.
So when you say behavioral health, respite, and recuperative care, what example of what that is?
Exactly. I can speak to behavioral health. Okay. So again, this is the this is the in between sort of the most intensive levels of care,
right,
but sort of that community-based housing where there's some of those behavioral supports, or we do have some programs that are purely just housing, but they need added behavioral health support, and we actually need more respite. So somebody who might actually have okay housing, but they need to be in a safe place for up to 30 days where there's a mental health team around them, sort of helping stabilize them. And I think recuperative care are folks around some physical health conditions. Is that
exactly? And also coming out of the situation of, so we have people who are in hospital care, they're in the hospital that are and then being released back into homelessness without recuperative care. So if you have an open wound, you're not sick enough to still be in the hospital, what happens? And you recall we had a contract a couple weeks ago with Kaiser Permanente to start to work on some of these issues of how we keep people out of the hospital, how we care for them when they come back out.
Central City does that as well.
Yes, right? Exactly. Yeah. And I think they have 8 beds, and so it's very limited.
Yeah, and
a big issue.
I visited all 3 hospital systems, and when they took me through, that was one of their biggest issues, is because even if they keep people as long as they possibly can, it's still not a good space. Yes.
And sometimes releasing them to warming shelters in the winter. I know, Gary, you've been on emails about this, of sending people from the hospital into a warming shelter that are need care. So this is a big gap.
So, commissioners, thank you. What I'd like to now, and we could have these conversations for probably a week to really get into them. So if you have additional questions, certainly feel free to contact H3S if you want another presentation at some kind of policy session or another to do that as well. But I really want to make sure that you're grounded in the fact that there's been a lot of time and effort spent really having an array of services, not enough, but an array of services. And I think as Egan said, the need has skyrocketed. And, you know, so what I want to do is talk about the first item on the agenda, which is the Blue Ribbon Commission. Because what I'd like to hear from you all is, first of all, who is the target population that you are focusing on the Blue Ribbon Commission? Is it people with houses? Is it people with mental health issues? Is it people with addiction? Is it all of the above? Because you talked about the behavior to the Blue Ribbon Commission in terms of initially houselessness and the causation for that. We also know that, you know, many, many people who are houseless have mental health and or addictions issues. Not everyone, but many do. And the needs of somebody who has a financial issue are going to be different than somebody who has a behavioral health issue. And so what I'd like to hear from the commissioners is, what is your intent for the Blue Ribbon Commission to advise on? Is it all 3? Is it specifically behavioral health? I'd like to hear from you.
I see it as addressing primarily, I don't see a mental health and addiction item, so addiction to this mental health issue, in my opinion.
They're the same.
Yeah, I see them as synonymous. I mean, not totally, but often.
So behavioral health.
So behavioral, I see it as dealing with kind of behavioral health, which I think indirectly will impact homelessness.
Yes.
But it's... And specifically kind of setting a framework that informs policy around a recovery-oriented system of care.
When you say recovery-oriented system of care, is that different than what you've heard?
I think there's many things that we already do that fall within that model. I think we always want to do more. And some of this will be, how do we fill these gaps? And what are our vision to fill these gaps? We may have the film right now, but what's the vision and plan to fill?
Oh, it really is that system of care.
Yeah.
Commissioner,
I just pulled this up.
I'm sorry. So we need you to stop and look at the magazine.
This is what I wanted to show you, because this is promoting health and safety through a behavioral health continuum of care. It's some of the information from the National Association of Counties. And essentially what they do is give you case studies from every county across the state and best practices. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of like my library thing with the policy. And for me, it's all of that. Because if you're houseless, if you're not mentally ill, if you're houseless and you're living in survival mode, I think it can sink into serious problems and addiction that way. I just see it as all one big circle. But okay.
So you see it here.
Yeah, I just going. It's the continuum.
Okay.
Yeah. I think this Blue Ribbon Committee is going to take a very holistic approach. And so houselessness, mental health, addiction, even outside legal issues that we have going on affect this law. For example, Measure 110, for example, the incursion of drugs through a forced international border. Seems to me all these things, you know, we look at treating mental health, addiction has huge problems. And look at all these other things that need to be addressed. We could, if we don't address those things, we'll be looking at mental health and addiction forever.
So one thing I want to clarify, I appreciate that. Yeah, same initially, anyway. When we're talking about houselessness, there's a need for workforce housing. Mm-hmm. These are people who need affordable housing. They don't have mental illness or addictions. Are you including that group in here?
No.
Okay.
I would agree with that. No.
It's not an economically displaced population. It may some say people on the bubble. This is specifically that chronic, persistent, in my opinion, like mental health addiction.
Driven by mental health and addiction.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yes. That we tend to see maybe more prevalent than some ones that are able to mask it a little easier and they're on the bubble. That is, they exist for reals, right. But like I think this help is to help deal with that chronic and persistent piece a little more.
Because doesn't rent assistance address the workforce housing in some areas? No.
They won't be eligible.
Really?
Yeah. No.
Yeah. So in order to get rent assistance, you have to be totally unemployed.
Yeah, we have so little rent assistance compared to the amount of calls that we get that there's a prioritization put on that. And so, and eviction, as we said earlier, is one of the main ones. So yeah, it is not for people that are working.
Chair, what's your sense on this?
I think we do need to narrow it in relation to handling 110 with a referral, an advisory vote to the legislature eventually, okay? Because we can't stop Measure 110 and Uncounted by itself. But I think we've identified that as a problem, one of the problems. I kind of think we need to do on the behavioral health route on the Commission West. And then I think we really need to pick, and then even streamline that further. And we're making some gains and we've got some pieces coming here and there. And if we were to do the behavioral health piece, which is mental health and addictions,
mm-hmm.
and we streamline that and we identify the gaps and then we identify what's on the table coming down the chute, I think that would take us a long way initially, or maybe the next 6 months.
No.
And then let's see where we are in 6 months.
So you're talking about doing a blue ribbon committee that's got phased outcomes, tasks. Is that right?
So let me ask you a question. What is the purpose? Why do you want a blue ribbon commission committee? So that gets to what you just asked.
Okay.
So the reason I think the committee is valuable is because you're taking input from outside of the existing echo chamber to do an analysis and an assessment on how to potentially fill the gaps. So I think the purpose of the commission would be to find outside expertise or stakeholders that can help do an analysis or an assessment on our current continuum of care, and then come up with implementable tasks or things we can do, and also help set a vision that informs our actions going forward. It's like a master plan.
Can I just mention, back in 2018, we had pulled together, I think Christina has the information. I think you folks we had a
It was when Jill Smith was here.
Mm-hmm.
And we came up with that blueprint of housing and gaps. And so that might be something that we just take a look at to inform.
Who was here then?
This was Jill Smith. And what we did at the time was convene mostly the advocates, including home builders and things of that sort, to help us out with that.
That was a housing thing, though.
That's a housing.
It was a housing thing, yes. It included the conversation,
right?
Addiction,
mm-hmm.
All of that. Yeah.
There was actually a meeting before that Chair Smith was on when I was here.
Yeah,
right. I did that exact
same thing.
We
kind of have many.
But it was housing focused.
I would argue in the last 3 years, the game has changed.
Yes, totally.
It has. We are in uncharted new territory, right? And that, to me, 2018, that was specifically more housing focused.
It was really more housing focused. But my criticism of it was this. When you talk about the Blueprint Committee, it's like what I saw yesterday. What we saw yesterday when we were getting the presentation at the Clackamas County Business Alliance, you had one of the top business thought leaders in the area, Oregon City and around the area, who has put his heart and soul into this and was able to pull together a coalition that thought outside the box. What I saw that happened yesterday was remarkable because there's pushback, but they set the table so expertly on moving that forward with a recovery center that it minimized, which was the problem, in my opinion, is what the problem we had with Turnby was too fast. We didn't have time to really set the table with thought leaders.
We are under a
grand. Sorry to interrupt. I want to get back to this.
Okay, so
what's the purpose? What do you think the purpose of the Blue Ribbon Commission is?
I think it's to bring thought leaders together who are community champions.
That's what it's made of. That's not what it's made of.
That's who we need to.
What's the purpose?
Do we want to do a recovery center?
I think they would speak to that.
If you want to bring thought leaders together to tell us how to do a recovery center,
yeah, isn't that?
I think that would be talked about. I could very well, at least what who I'm recommending for it, would very think they would bring that to the table.
To me, that would be building. I'm just trying to think. What can we build on that we saw happen yesterday from an external group of thought leaders that now they're going to have a navigation center? What would be the next step for those people who are going to the navigation center when it comes to housing?
Yeah, that's where they're identifying the gaps. Oh, we have a navigation center, but you still have these other gaps, right?
Yes, yeah.
And so that would be a gap identifier as you would need a recovery center.
So what does recovery center mean, though?
I use it the most.
So we talk about recovery centers. Does that mean long-term that residential treatment center for addiction, which takes months and months, maybe a year?
Is that a recovery system of care or a recovery center?
So a recovery center within the model framework of a recovery oriented. It's part of a recovery oriented system of care. Part of that includes a center where you can have long-term residential recovery.
Got it. All right. Community at all. What do you think the purpose is?
That's what I like. Go ahead.
Purpose of the Blue Ribbon Panel is to identify the drivers of mental health and addiction leading to homelessness and to recommend ideas for corrective action.
And Commissioner Scholl, just to speak to your point about Measure 110, which we all have spoken to in agreement, we all have agreement on this issue. I'm sure that the loop would maybe come back with some value statements, right? But we're not going to solve Measure 110. We're going to stake a worldview and a value system within Clackamas County in our opinion on 110 and see what our voters think. But I can also maybe see a Blue Ribbon Commission saying, here's some value statements along with your guys' plan. But I don't necessarily think they'll have a plan to take on Measure 110 or the international workers.
What I was saying here is that the purpose of the Blue Ribbon Panel they have to first identify what the problem is, what's causing this horrible mental health and addiction problem in our society, and the homelessness that's associated with it. Look at what's causing that. Now, what can the Blue Ribbon Committee recommend as ways to correct those?
Yeah.
Now, one of those things is, you know, the treatment first idea.
Yeah.
Right.
That's under recovery.
That might be one. That might be one of their recommended actions that we can take.
Yeah.
But at the end, the end state would be, in an ideal world, now we're looking at an ideal end state, would be the result of this Blue Ribbon panel, identification of the drivers of these problems and their recommendation for corrective action, leads to a situation where our society is going back to health once again, where the number of mental health and homeless people addiction is markedly reduced.
That your implementation of your action plan, your actionable items, the measurable outcomes is the reduction of homeless people, right? So that's the end goal.
Yeah.
But we need that whole we need the whole ICM potentially on the issue of addiction and mental health, speaking to some of the things that you've identified even in here, right? Here are
clear at the gaps.
Yeah, right. Here are some clear gaps. So let's dive into those gaps. It also helps us be better elected advocates.
Yeah.
When we go to the legislature and to the federal government, it makes us completely aware and ready to do our job better. And then I think it also allows us to maybe like refine all the great things we are already doing and take it to a whole nother level. So I think it's filling the gaps with actionable items that are measurable.
So,
Chair, what do you think the purpose?
So we have some identifiable gaps in these organizations. Mm-hmm. The Blue Ribbon Commission could help us come in and help us fill those gaps. How do we fill the identifiable gaps? And are these the only gaps that are identified? We're assuming that this is complete. We don't know what we don't know. Right. Because I think the most valuable statement that was said in here today is, in the last year, everything has just gone out of control.
Yeah.
We, as public health officials, we don't know what the hell. So just not right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I do think the end result is we get them into housing. I think that to me is a natural end result. I don't think we start with housing. I think the housing will come along. Does that make sense?
That's a component of that care.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what gaps would you folks, as our experts?
I can't hear Martha.
I'm curious about what do you want to see filled in as a gap? What would be important? I mean,
I love to take the courthouse as an opportunity to really expand our behavioral health services on an outpatient level.
The old courthouse?
No. Because of the courthouse, that has given us an opportunity to get a new facility. I'll give you an example.
You know, we were concerning buying on
Lake. Yes, right.
Hampdenville.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's a gift.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're moving forward with that. Question, right.
Yeah. Here's what I'm going to oppose.
That's executive session material, Commissioner.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, nobody heard that.
Commissioner, we know what the gaps are. There may be some that we don't know. All of this is going to cost money. So my question to you is, you're going to have this Blue Ribbon Commission. We can talk about who should populate that. They're going to identify all this stuff. And it's going to be great. It's going to be fabulous. Now what are you going to do?
We can prioritize where we can to start to meet those needs and goals, right? We can prioritize the master plan. And you pick that low-hanging fruit and actionable items first. And then you're on your same on your action plan. Okay, you do a whole plan for all the parks in Clackamas County.
I look at the right. Problems differently than you. I'm going to interrupt.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm going to interrupt. We identify our pots of money because we can plan ad nauseum of this grandiose Taj Mahal of system care
We don't have the money to do it because we have different identified pots of money that can go here, that can go there. Some of it's finite, you know, some of it's coming in quite a bit. SHS dollars, Metro One, the opioid dollars, any other additional monies from the legislature, any additional federal monies coming in. I think we look at our pots of money and concurrently, do we have a pot of money that does number one? Do we have a pot of money that does number two? That we can still identify.
Yeah,
But I think the money at least initially needs to be our driver.
That's what I was getting at.
Yeah.
That's important. Like we have these big master plans, right? And then some of these things are like, okay, this is easy. We're going to do phase one. We're knocking these out of the park. We have the money for it. We're going to work to get the money for these other things. That's our goal. But, you know, that could be if even further down the road. It doesn't mean we don't need them or want them, but you do it through where your funding is. Yeah.
Funding is the driver. Yeah,
I had a question on that. Is if funding is the driver on help form the purpose of the Blue Ribbon panel, then we're already going to be limiting what our potential corrective actions are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't the primary purpose of the Blue Ribbon panel to be able to recommend and the ideal corrective action? And once that's done, then we pare it down into what we can actually afford to do based on the money that's available. But like, for example, you want to take your son on vacation, he said, let's go to Disneyland. You say, well, let's just go to Seaside. Before you do that, you have to be able to look at, hey, what's the ideal situation here? Yeah. What can we afford to do? We can end up with this.
Yeah.
But if we end up with this, it's only after we assess what our ideal outcome should be.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with that, Mark.
Okay.
But I was just answering your question.
So given what you're talking about, essentially you want people from quote unquote the outside, which you mean outside of Clackamas County staff, I'm assuming.
Even Oregon is okay.
Even Oregon. Who are essentially going to identify what should the, for want of a better phrase, the ideal system of care look like, and overlay that on what we do, and identifying the gaps, and then prioritizing those gaps, prioritizing those resources, and that's where you bring in the prioritizing the need, and then you bring in the finances, and you overlay it on that. And so, given that, what are the type of people that you want to populate the Blue Ribbon Commission, number one. Number two, Blue Ribbon Commissions, as you know, can go on forever. And I'm assuming that's not what you want. And so what is an appropriate time? Because you can have these meetings. The work is going to be done in between the meetings. The work doesn't get done at the commission. The question is, who's going to do the work? And so is that an expectation of county staff are going to go do all this research or that these people are going to bring it? You know, things like that, we can work on the details. But I just want you to think of that when you start looking at how often and how, you know, how many times should we meet? So let's first talk about the who should populate them. Whether you have a name or a type of person, that's fine.
I do.
Yeah, cool.
I knew that you would.
I'm making a quick note of myself here. Okay. So I have five or six right off the bat. I think I held back a little bit. I sent some of this to an email to every commissioner when I gave a synopsis of my trips to Calgary when it was specifically dealing with recovery experts in Calgary. It was brilliant. It was amazing. So the first person I have is Tom Wolf at the Pacific Alliance for Prevention and Recovery. Problems in expert recovery systems, homelessness, supportive housing, and drug policy.
Where is he from?
San Francisco.
Okay.
He's
the Alliance.
Policy. Yeah, he's the Pacific Alliance for Prevention and Recovery. Pacific Alliance for, yeah. And then Dr. Keith Humphreys out of Stanford was going to potentially go, but he had some surgery recently. So he recommended one of the, I have to find out who this is, one of the leading addiction doctors out of OHSU. That he had partnered with. They were also strong and strong opposition out of Stanford and OHSU presidential intent. When they testify in the legislature, I have a link there about some of Dr. Humphrey's writings, but he recommended potentially working with his buddy at OHSU, who's one of the leading addiction doctors in the world. Sheldon Bailey is a senior policy advisor to the Shadow Minister of Addictions in Canada.
The Shadow?
So that's why they have weird names in Canada. It's basically the opposition party. He is the senior policy advisor to the opposition of the current party in Canada. Canadian government policy advisor on addiction services. Robert Malbet is one of the leading homeless consultants and professors in North America.
Robert who?
Robert Marbut, M-A-R-B-U-T. And then I believe he also was, hold on, I'm missing here. He worked for the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness from 2019 to 2021. So he was part of the federal government, and that was Robert Malbert. And then Dr. Rob Tange, leading psychiatrist who specializes in pain, addiction medicine, recovery services.
Okay.
And Kevin Dahlgren, locally. Those are my recommendations. Kevin Dahlgren.
I'm going blank of the
S-D-A-H-L-G-R-E-N.
He's a Harvard fellow. He wrote a book on houselessness. Do you remember who he is? I'll have to find it out.
Other names, other types of people.
Well, I guess my question with this is, I think this is great. And it would be a wonderful community education panel. So who do we want locally to help introduce these people, not just us? Because that's going to be part of...
Two of my people are local.
Okay. But like, do we want Dan Fowler involved in this because of the work they've done? Do you want...
I recommended Dan was online last
year. And I think I was great.
But we haven't got to me yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, let's just move forward.
Yeah.
But yeah, he would be one.
Dan Fowler from Oregon City, F-O-W-L-E-O.
And I have one more, Rick Armstrong, who's built recovery centers throughout Southwest Canada. So and Rick Armstrong. I will send all that to you. Yeah.
Thank you. This is going to cost.
Let me share your others.
Sorry. Do any of these people you recommend overlap each other? They sound like some.
So Dr. Tangre may overlap with the local doctor, right? They're both doctors.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, yes.
Okay. I think we should now maybe depend on
it. Let me just make the whole list.
Just make the list.
Let me make the whole list and then we'll go through and, yeah. People okay. I'm just throwing all on there.
Gary, do you have other names?
Sorry for the spot.
All right, your representatives were business leaders in the area.
Yes, I did have some business leaders because the business leaders whom I'm thinking of build stuff.
Yep.
They know how to get her done. And we can bring in some builders.
Who you can give us some
builders? Neil Nolesky.
Yeah, Neil, that was one.
Terry Emmer is very interested in this.
He's Oxford Housing.
Yeah, he has Oxford Houses. He has land.
Yeah.
Okay. He has dealt with the addiction issue much that we're not aware of that.
Okay. Anybody else?
What about people from hospital systems? Ruth Atkins.
Maybe Kaiser's Ruth Atkins. That's
Kaiser.
OHSU.
OHSU.
Who was the hospital people? Do you folks know?
What about Sean Stone, Dr. Stone?
Dr. Stone, yeah. I know him.
He's up the emergency room.
Yeah, you almost really want that front door representation, the emergency room versus sort of the inpatient kind of.
Sean Stone. He's also really well connected with the rural community of Clackamas County.
Good.
Yes, he is. That's an excellent
one. Well, again, people throw. So, and who's he affiliated with? The Legacy Providence.
Providence.
Well, actually,
Dr. Sean's
advisor.
Providence.
Yes,
he's Providence.
Okay.
Commissioner
Shaw,
did you have names?
I don't have any names to offer. I was thinking.
You and I talked about it.
Oh, yeah, the gentleman that came in to see us last week.
Him, and also you had suggested Amy Jo Cook, the community paramedic.
She's a community outreach for our district. She does a lot of...
She has that Project Hope program outreach. Right. Yeah. She'll be retiring.
More importantly than the names, I always think that these people... some of these people, at least, have to be able to look at this problem with a fresh mindset and not be prejudiced by maybe being being involved with current Oregon government.
Right.
To be able to look at this problem in a completely unbiased, and fresh look, okay, and not be limited by maybe the reality of our political environment as addressing some of these problems, the frictions that we have to deal with in Oregon. So I'm hoping we'll have people that have that fresh, big picture, unprejudiced ability.
So let me mention two things if I could. One is that if you have this all with people who are not connected at all to the system, you're going to have people from the system going, WTF.
That's correct.
You know, these people, I mean, they don't have to walk our walk or live our life. And I'm thinking you may want to look at adding some other people who are local experts to this group, so you have that conversation and you don't just have outsiders, if you will, saying this is what you should do, but you mix it up a little bit.
And who would that be?
I was going to suggest Gina Nichols. Who? Gina Nichols, the head of the executive director of Associated Warming Counties.
I don't look at her as the thought expert in this area.
Oh, she's done a lot of work in mental health.
I know you say that.
Let's just add local folks. I'm just going to put that. We don't have to come up
with it. With some of our direct staff, like our staff that's really talented and experts in this. We have Mary in the room. Sorry, I'm going to throw you. Don't say my name. So Mary or even Adam these are thought leaders that are like we rely on, right? So to have them not in the room there interacting with this group and like, creating the sausage is a problem. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong.
There is a collaboration that has to happen.
But I'm going back to our original intent when we were at our retreat. We all came up with this idea because we wanted a different frame of thought. Mm-hmm. Okay, we wanted. And by the way, staff, you're fantastic. Don't let this be a reflection on you. And I think you guys are pretty strong people. Okay, we're just trying to look at it differently.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that was the original intent. So we do need that outside force, and we like creating the sausage. So to be an effective group,
because I don't want this group just to dictate either to the town, to people that are doing amazing work in our county, and some sitting in this room, and some aren't here today. But there is that piece of like coming together.
So to be an effective group, is there a magic number that is too much?
Yeah, we have too many. And peers, I think, are important to have.
Yeah.
So one of the things you may want to think about in terms of format, rather than having a couple hour meetings, a couple apart, you may want to have a whole day meeting.
Oh, no, I'm thinking it's whole day.
Yeah, so that you are able and to break up the meeting to really focus on different elements and get the right people in those parts. And so by the end of the day, you're bringing it all together. So again, it's just a different way of looking at it. Rather than having this panel being seen as the come on high, but that you're having this group and they are probably leading some of the work groups during the day, and you come back with this kind of a unified plan, if you will.
No, I definitely at least one day in the initial. Mary.
Yeah. I just also am curious whether there's a place for representation from our coordinated care organizations. They are holding the funding. And so to your point around, we really do need to understand the availability of community investments. Because, for example, the state of Oregon has adopted the Oregon crisis or the crisis now model for 24/7 mobile crisis response. They did not do any costing out. We're expected to have a 24/7 awake person response. And when we do the modeling across the state as community, we have a $20 million biennial gap. And so what we don't want to do, again, to this point, we do want to think big, but we want to also understand. So I just don't know. I think we have great partnerships with our two CCOs. They are also thought leaders because their job is to help us think through what, you know, sort of what they can use their dollars to expand sort of the network of services. So I don't want to forget that they're actually an important player. We just don't probably have them at the table nearly as much as we probably should.
So what I'm thinking is you have a day where you've got your BLP, your BRP, excuse me, that's not for Blue Ribbon panel, who kind of kicks it off. And then you have these various groups that are meeting during the day. And that's where you have your CCO, where you're looking at finance, you're looking at, you know, some local folks. So you've got this. And then at the end of the day, it all kind of back here. And then you can look at, okay, what are some next steps that need to happen? So you have this, you engage more local people here, but you still have this group kind of kicking it off.
Mm-hmm.
And yes.
Pierce, I love you part of the peer thing. Three of the people I recommended are all recovering. They live in recovery.
Right.
Does it matter that they're not local and they're peers? They have a recovery mind frame because they are recovering. They all come from from a place of addiction. How they would do this work, but even if it's important, it's not curable. I guess my question to you.
It would be important that they identify themselves as peers on the panel.
Okay.
Doctors. So that people know that.
Tom Sheldon and Rick Armstrong are all they're all living in recovery.
Are they doctors?
No, but they have significant, amazing, inspiring stories about being recovered. Yeah.
But what do they do?
So Tom Wolf is the founded after, you know, he founded the Policy Alliance for Prevention and Recovery. Sheldon Bailey now works in the Canadian government in this topic. Right. And then Rick Armstrong builds recovery centers throughout Southwest Canada. All of them are recovering addicts.
So it'll be important then to identify in that, the peers can be in some of these groups here, but as long as they identify perfect. That.
Okay.
We have till 2:30, so I talk really fast, so I can talk even faster. But if you want, we can put something like this together. I want to get a minute to the town hall and outreach.
Yeah, community outreach.
Community outreach. And okay. I'm going to throw out a suggestion to have all this community outreach. That what I've seen or read is that there's a discussion about town halls. And what I'm going to suggest, and you can shoot it down, is that rather than have these town hall meetings, which you can all write the script for and know what's going to be said, is that you have meetings with vested interest groups. You meet with the business community, you meet with the electives, you meet with a group of maybe school districts, that you have focused meetings rather than these broad town halls where you're not going to learn anything.
I do too. I think that's great.
That's perfect because I have to like ask somebody, when are we going to be?
Well, I can see that focused.
Yeah.
Yes.
A focused intent for the name instead of an international bitch. Sorry.
Oh my God. Yes. Like
yeah.
The seniors and people with disability. By the way, seniors.
16 or 16 mayors.
16 mayors. Yeah. The electeds in our Texas County caucus and the senior organizations are doing incredible work right now.
Yeah.
The business community, they want to do the chamber, for example.
Yeah.
North Black Chamber.
We can talk to more about
that. Yeah, OCBA and CCBA.
Yep.
And
that's a fantastic way to narrow that down.
Yeah. What I can do is I'll send you a list of potential groups and you can say yay, nay on them or yeah to them, but then just give you, because I think it's going to be a lot more productive.
I do too. Okay. Excellent idea, Cindy.
That's why you pay me the big bucks.
That's
not,
right.
Not. Yes,
I not a smile from Gary. Not a smile.
I just want to make a plug for the local nonprofits as being one of those groups to speak to.
Great. Okay. So what I'm going to do is take all this material and we'll feed it back to you. I think you've got way too many people. On this blue ribbon. The other thing is becomes how often do you want to meet? I've heard let's just do two meetings, and I've heard let's meet for 6 months. So, which kind of made me gag a little bit, but What do you guys think?
Well, what if we had like two in-person meetings, and if we need more, we can substitute with Zoom?
Like a strategy, like we did for our, we did a little getaway or a little retreat for a day or two. And then after that, if they want to make some advice on progress, like a once a month or quarterly meeting by Zoom, they just jump in on Zoom and then, you know, they're coming from all over.
I don't think the Blue Ribbon Commission or whatever we call it, commission is not the right word, I don't think. Let's call it Blue Ribbon panel. Probably not more than 2 months.
And we could always be like, hey, it's going over 2 months and we want to add another month, but I'm sure we can.
And then what, let's have a champion at 6 months.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so we have a 1 day meeting and then you have to follow up by Zoom.
Can we do all that in 1 day or do you need two?
Well, that's my question to you. I think
the initial piece is a ton. Mm-hmm. I want it's like a 2 day.
So if we're going to bring people in, fly them in for a hotel.
One and a half day
meeting.
Yeah.
Okay. That way they can leave in the afternoon.
Okay.
Okay, 1.5 day meeting and then follow up with Zoom.
Yeah. Okay. We're just going to need a side
project. We're going to put all this together as a proposal. We'll come back to you in public for you to make a decision.
Okay. I'm wondering what that means when Garrett says that.
You know,
it's the guys.
Just 100 days in, Garrett, I'm starting to pick up what you're laying down.
we've had a lot of names brought up today, but we all are not familiar with these people. So we need to have some sort of way to get some information bullet each one. So when we get to the point, we can say, okay, we can vote or whatever on who needs to be on the panel. Also, we need a opportunity to submit a couple other names that were submitted today.
Okay.
I think Carolyn.
Let me ask if you would work with your policy advisors. If your policy advisors could just email me the names and maybe the one sentence description, you could just do that. That'd be great. That gives you a couple of days to think about it as well. Does that work?
Yep.
Okay. Easy. And let's we'll get the list together and identify overlap.
Yeah. Yes. Right. So if you could put like area of expertise or whatever, so if we see we have all the same, you know, 10 people in the same area of expertise, we can look at how we shuffle that.
Yeah.
So yeah. So what are we missing? We've got 5 more minutes. We got a lot accomplished, I think. What are we missing?
I have a headache.
Well,
you're supposed to say that. I'm just so meaning.
right here,
Cindy. I'm personally still not clear on what the mission statement is for this committee, so that people who want to know, okay, here's exactly what we are to achieve, and here is the final product. As Blue Ribbon panel is supposed to produce, so that we can take that, assess it, and then decide which ones we're going to act on and save the world, reduce all homelessness, and go home for Christmas.
So we need a mission statement, you're saying, Mark?
Yeah, they need to know exactly what they're supposed to be doing, what their mission statement is. So,
and the outcomes, clear. The outcomes
expected, yeah, right now. Those outcomes need to be very general. They can't be detailed. They have, because we're not directing them to come to an outcome. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yes.
Okay.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great point. So what's the purpose and what are the expected outcomes, right? And the outcomes are not asking them to tell us to do something. It is really, this is, you know, there is a system of care, if you will, and is what we would like to see anybody strive for. And here's where you are in relationship to that. One of the things that I just want to put a plug in for this, and Mary and the Sheriff's Office, we're co-chairing a committee made up of Sheriff's Office, local police, EMT, medical, peers, behavioral health, CCOM, and fire. To look at the system of care, if you will, for people with mental health and addictions, keep them out of inappropriate placements in the ER and the jail. Yeah. And so one of the groups that we haven't talked about, which really does have an impact, is CCOM, because they are inundated with calls, behavioral health calls over and over again. And, you know, and they've come to the table and we've looked at, so there's been some other solutions that aren't part of the formal system that are still in development, but there's some other things. People want to solve this, you know, because it's impacting everything. They really want to solve it. And they actually, what Clackamas has more than other counties I've worked in is the desire of all these groups to get together, come together for mutual conversations and figuring things out. And that's not the same in other counties. So I think we need to take advantage of that. So
that's great.
There's 2 minutes left. And any other questions or comments? Well, commissioners, you're free to go.
So staff, Cindy will put together a memo with all the things you discussed today, and our PAs will help, and I will help refine it. We'll come back to you at issues 2 weeks from now, Cindy. Is that enough time?
Sure.
Okay, so May 9th for you to react and make a decision.
May I add that when it's all done, if you were to bring somebody in here, sit them down in the chair, who's a high school 10th grader, and read what we have, they would understand what needs to be done. Okay? It's got to be that simple. Thank you very much.
To be honest with you, what you might hear from a lot of these folks is validation of what you're already doing in this county. So
I'm down with validation.
Yes. I mean, you'll hear something like that, but trust me.
Yeah.
You're going to hear a lot of,
You have to understand that us as electeds, especially this board, we have just... It's a new board too, and we're in the midst of a lot of bad policymakers that made a bad policy that got us where we're at. So we need to know that we're on the right track and have confidence in that. And that's kind of the lens that we have to look at it. We don't want to make the same mistakes as other bad policymakers.
Good people, but bad policymakers.
Yes, well, perfectly said. I stand corrected.
Yes. All right. Anything else, Commissioner?
Commissioners, yeah. Is there anything else on your mind you want to talk about since we're here?
I have something.
Okay.
How do you make those stick on the wall there?
They come with sticky stuff on the back. It's like a giant post-it. Come on now. I have something quick. I do have something quick.
I spit on them all.
I have something quick, and I emailed
it. You can go. Thank you.
I emailed some kind of four rapid housing policy ideas to Chair Smith. She knew that email was coming today. I want him to be put onto hopefully a policy issue after I flesh out a little more with Chair Smith, but we're on the same page. I had conversations with Adam Brown and Rod and Gary and my PA and some other, a lot of people have been in this conversation behind the scenes for the last couple of weeks. There are some ways that we can be nimble and quick to get housing up affordably and in a rapid way. So that's what I'm going to, I just want to give you guys a heads up.
That's great.
I'm more than happy to share the email that I shared with Chair Smith with all of you or have staff do it because then we're being careful of the chain of communication. So I just want to bring that up.
First, and what you want to do, I mean, anybody can look at it, I don't care, but I have a feeling we might just need to narrow it maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fair enough. But I just want to make everybody aware.
Anybody?
Yep.
I have to say I didn't have to give anybody the hat. So thank you
for
working. Yeah,
I would have messed up my hair.
Did you
wear
that hat
yourself?
No, because I always play well with
others. So you have to know, and Cindy, that was her last time. She gave me one of those that says, plays well with others, and mine is gray. And I have it in my office.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Thank you all.
Thank you all.
Yeah,
it wasn't that.
We got a lot done in a small amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Cindy, very much. You can write the mission statement.